WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset.
Now I had the time of my life. No, I never felt like this before. Yes, I swear. It's a truth, and I owe it all to you.
This song paints a picture. A man in black, a woman in white, walking out on stage to perform a breathtaking dance. There's love in their eyes as they spin around each other in front of a captivated audience. I'm of course describing the iconic scene from the 1987 hit Dirty Dancing, starring Jennifer Grey and Patrick Swayze. The Time of My Life by Bill Medley and Jennifer Warnes defined that scene, and that scene defined the movie. So we wanted to unpack this essential pairing of music and movies. I sat down with Rebecca Fons, director of programming at the Gene Siskel Film Center, and Michael Phillips, film critic for the Chicago Tribune. I started by asking why music is so important for films. Here's Rebecca.
Everybody has a favorite song. Everyone has an emotion that they tie to those songs that they love. And so when there's a needle drop in a movie or a favorite song comes on in an emotional moment or a dramatic moment, I think it just further connects us to the visuals on screen. And sound and music and film can make you lean back. It can really just sort of get you in an emotional, hit your emotional kind of like elbow bone, you know.
Hit you right there in the
And I mean, you play that music from Dirty Dancing and I am like 12 years old again. And
well, so I saw nostalgia. The two of you light up as soon as it started.
Patrick Swayze. So there's a nostalgia, too, with these songs that are older songs that we know that we grew up listening to. So it just gets us in those spots that maybe just the visuals wouldn't without the music paired to it.
And now you know what movie you need to watch tonight.
Yeah, obviously. Again.
You're welcome. Do you have a favorite movie soundtrack, Michael?
Oh, my God. You know, my first thought when I go back to when you asked that question is, like, you go back to the ones that were just on every single basement or living room stack of LPs when I was in high school, which was 1840, I think. But the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, among others.
Oh, yes.
I mean, a lot of people went into the movie cold without hearing any of the songs. I just haven't met anybody. Because they all went in humming like everyone. And that's a stunningly good collection of tunes.
Well, what you said good. What sets a good one apart from the rest?
That Saturday Night Fever is an interesting kind of hybrid movie anyway, because it's not a full musical, neither is Dirty Dancing. But the dance scenes are so strong and they're so legitimately well performed by the stars. In the case of Saturday Night Fever, John Travolta all the way. That you didn't need songs as catchy as the Bee Gees wrote, but there they were. And that's just kind of like magic every which way. And I mean, just from the capitalism point of view, it all worked, right? I mean, everybody had the album.
That is true.
And that movie just kept, you know, rough as that film was, I mean, that's a pretty raspy, kind of difficult movie to watch in some cases.
But so iconic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rebecca, the Siskel Music Box Theater and the Salt Shed, you all are teaming up to host the Mubi Fest.
Yes.
Mubi, M-U-B-I Fest, next weekend. What can you tell us?
Sure. Mubi, M-U-B-I, is hosting the only Mubi Fest in the country is in Chicago, which is really great, but it's across the world in Bogota and Manchester and in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And we're presenting four films on Saturday, August 17th that all have like a music thread through them. So that includes Robert Altman's Nashville, which is incredible, you know, list of films and performances of the lead characters playing these great kind of folksy country songs. The film The Last Days of Disco, directed by Walt Stillman, which is just a great, you know, you've got Diana Ross and Sister Sledge.
Yeah.
And then a film called Babylon from 1980 that really leans into like lovers rock and reggae film, reggae music. Mm-hmm. And then a new film called My First Film that I understand, I think, the young people will really love this. There's a new Perfume Genius song in this movie. So it's like a debut song in this debut film. So this through line of music through all the films we're playing at the Film Center, as well as at the Music Box, and then Salt Shed is doing they're having a performance.
And you brought up my first film. We should mention it's a debut feature of Zia Anger.
Mm-hmm,
that's
right.
an up and coming director out of the Art Institute.
That's right. Zia is a grad of SAIC.
Nice.
Yeah, nice to have a hometown
nice
person.
Work, Zia.
Yeah.
What screenings are you most excited to see, Michael? I mean, there's Nashville, as Rebecca said, The Last Days of Disco's Mo Better Blues.
Yeah, I mean, that Mo Better Blues is great.
I know. Right?
It's really one of Spike Lee's best. I haven't seen my first film, so that's really the one I gotta just run that. I haven't seen Nashville properly, like on a big screen.
Oh, yeah. Now's your chance.
In a long time. So,
this is an amazing 4K restoration on our 4K digital projector. So it looks really good and sounds really good. So it's just a really good time in the theater.
Now, on the final day, there will be a screening of Labyrinth, which is a cult classic starring David Bowie. Let's listen to Magic Dance. That's a fan favorite, of course, from the film.
I saw my baby trying hard as babe could try. What could I do? My baby's fun has gone.
Such a wonderfully bizarre movie this one is. The garish costume of Bowie as Jareth the Goblin King, Jim Henson's puppetry, but really the music is the star of the show here. So no wonder it's a selection for the festival, right?
Yeah. I feel like I learned about David Bowie through Labyrinth when I was a kid. Like
really?
That was my introduction, which is wild.
I would say the synthesizer is the star of the film, even more than
Bowie. And his hair.
What stands out to you, Michael, about the music that David Bowie made for this film?
Oh my God. Well, it is so...
Other than the synth.
Yeah, I mean, it is so much a product of its time. But I think when you see a song that brings that you liked, that it's and by somebody as big as Bowie, who had many different persona and sounds through those years, but that one just hits the moment. And again, you can't ever think about it separate from the that movie with its weird mixture of Muppets and goblins and all
oh
of it.
Gosh.
And yeah, I mean, why not? Let's see it again.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move on to film scores. Rebecca, people might know Hans Zimmer or John Williams.
Yep.
Is there a lesser known composer who you think needs more praise?
Well, he's certainly not a lesser known composer, but I don't think people think about him with film necessarily. And that's Philip Glass. That's someone who I really love. He's an incredible composer, and he's his music has been in films like Candyman, the original Candyman, another Chicago classic, The Truman Show.
Big deal.
And he's just like... He brings this sort of energy and pep and sort of modernism to some of the scores that he does. So I just always, whenever there's a Philip Glass score, I'm actually more likely to watch a film because of the Philip Glass score, because I respect him so much as a composer, but then he just adds so much to these films. So Philip Glass is really up there for me.
That's a really good one. Composers you want to give some love to, Michael?
Yeah, he's not as big a name as John Williams, but Michael Abels, in just a handful of films with Jordan Peele, has become, you know, a major American film composer. And he was out of the gate with Get Out. He was like, it was a great...
I mean, was masterful.
Yeah, and there's a great story where Spielberg apparently ran into Jordan Peele and said, he's your John Williams.
And I didn't know that that movie would do as well as it did at first.
Yeah,
when I first saw it, I was like, I can't believe it.
Unbelievable. Yep.
Got such a hold of us.
Yeah, it's great. And you know what I loved? I loved the second film he made, Us, which was a more difficult film, more challenging, made just as much money.
Yes.
Which is like, yes.
And there are songs from Us that still haunt me to today. I literally just brought it up last week to one of my daughters. So I was I always think of Us when I hear this.
And a film like like Get Out is, you know, it's a thriller and it's made so much more terrifying and so much more visceral through that score. I mean, mm-hmm. it's like you think about missing the mark with the score or having a song that didn't really quite fit. And it's like that is really, when you think about scores and then you think about soundtracks, they can make or break. And so I think when I think about Get Out, I think about the music a lot.
Yeah,
I think
totally.
It really sets a mood that seeps into you in your seat while you're watching mm-hmm. it.
I don't feel like it's competing with the images too.
No.
It's like underneath it, which is where you want it.
Yeah.
The composer, Michael Giacchino, who was great too, did all the Pixar stuff and he's wonderful.
Yeah.
And he said, he had an uncle who said, was a tailor and he said, yeah, what I do is I make suits for movies.
Yes.
They have to fit. They really have to fit.
Yeah. No, it's the song. I was trying to remember the song from Us. I got five on it.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Which is normally just upbeat, right? I got five
yeah.
on
right,
it.
Right,
but
right,
Us down. Slows it down. It's like da-da-da.
And it sort of echoes a little bit when the lyrics come in. Yeah.
Right.
I mean it's like the Jaw. I mean that's like the Jaws soundtrack.
It is.
The score, excuse me, the John Williams score, like da 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 da. I mean like
yes.
that is you
like
hear
two
that.
Notes.
Oh, and you're getting out of the water.
You're terrified. Other movie score that you think is truly iconic, Michael?
Well, I love from kind of the Hollywood golden age, Bernard Herrmann's stuff for Hitchcock.
Oh, I mean,
and it's many more than one kinds of sound, because if you listen to Psycho, that's just like flat out scary as hell. If you hear something like Vertigo or North by Northwest, it's a whole different kind of movie, different kinds of films. And that guy was the most creative instrumental genius about just pulling out these instruments nobody had used for centuries, essentially.
Yeah.
Just great. And he's not a subtle composer. He's very much competing, but Hitchcock's such a master director. That was another pairing that, you know, when you get the right director working with the right composer mm-hmm. over and over, they really get each mm-hmm. other.
Yeah, how could I forget Hitchcock?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Before we let you go, Rebecca, where can listeners find out more about Mubi Fest?
You got it. All the screenings.
I want to say Mubi.
Mubi. All of the screenings and all the information is at SiskelFilmCenter.org/Mubi.
That's Rebecca Fons, who's director of programming at the Gene Siskel Film Center, and Michael Phillips, who's a film critic for the Chicago Tribune. Now, a reminder, the Mubi Fest is next weekend, so it starts August 17th. Thank you both.
Thank you.
It's fun.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and 5 specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
This is Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. If you're just tuning in, we've been talking about the impact of music on some iconic movies. Let's turn now to Ray Ho, who's a Chicago-based singer-songwriter and film composer. Ray, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me here.
Ray, you actually split your time between here in Chicago and Taipei. And right now we're listening to a piece that you made for Shining for One Thing. That's a Chinese feature film that came out last year. Talk about your work as a composer. What's so intriguing about creating music, but for the screen?
Yes. So I feel like as a composer, it's just you get to touch on so like a diverse palette of music. And I just love the delicacy of things. I love bringing little scenes that people usually don't see on screen to life. Like I really like to hone in on little glances and like in romantic movie, little cheesy handholdings and somehow make them more classy and turn them into something that the director didn't think of beforehand, but loves at as an end product.
That's a good strategy. I want to get the composer's perspective on a question that I asked earlier. Why is music in movies so important, Ray?
I think because a scene can be interpreted in so many ways in a movie, and which can be very subjective, obviously. But even with the music, it can still be very subjective. But I think our job as a composer is like a conductor to kind of guide the audience to the right direction. But you can still have a breathing space for them to actually think about what's really important in the movie.
Yeah.
And think about which part is the pivotal part. And then you can really hone in on that when you really let them decide. Yeah.
So what's your process like then? I mean, how do you go about doing that? Matching the mood or emotions or what you want people to, what do you want to convey in a particular scene?
So obviously the first main thing is to have good communication with the director and to satisfy everything he wants or she. But when the director gives you full freedom, which I love, you get to, I usually watch a movie at least two or three times without music, sometimes without dialogue, to just see which scenes the director kind of subconsciously even just wants to bring out. And then I kind of, the coloring, it's all about coloring and connections and just communications with your director and the lighting crew. And if you have VR and if you have CGI people, it's just to communicate with them on their process. And then you can really bring what they tried to do out even more.
That is fascinating, Ray. So you listen or you watch movies rather with no sound just to see what you can draw from it.
Yes,
before you even start thinking about music.
Yeah, I love watching the raw cuts. I love reading scripts before the movies is actually even made. I like if a movie is in its very initial phase of production, I like just making music just based on the script before they even shoot sometimes to let the director have something to shoot with in some cases.
Wonderful. Well, you've got a new EP. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
How does that feel?
It feels crazy because I've never really imagined myself to be releasing an EP as a composer. I feel like when you're like a behind the scenes artist, you're kind of used to it and you kind of get comfortable. And then when you really start hearing yourself on like a streaming platform, you hear your own voice, you start being like, whoa,
that's me.
It's kind of weird to have yourself out in the front now.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you better get used to it. Let's listen to a little bit. Here's Two Birds. So on your website, you describe this EP as a, quote, auditory sanctuary that portrays different angles of visual distance through sound. I mean, this sounds like a concept inspired by your work on visual media. But can you explain this for us?
Yes. So I think I try to write my songs with the same approach as my composing, which is I really like doing delicate stuff and I really like doing slow stuff, which hones in on little things. I think the world, we have a lot of very fast music and we have a lot of very fast paced media that I want listeners to just come to my EP as like this place they can slow down and just calm themselves down. Just like how they might have the patience to watch a full movie and have a patience to watch a whole slow film.
Yeah. Well, what you're saying makes a lot of sense because I know that you've worked on a good deal of love stories, right?
Oh, yes. Yes.
So something about your style pairs well with romance.
Yes. I like doing delicate stuff. I like taking my time to write stuff and just very slowly be detailed, sprinkle stuff everywhere, mm-hmm. and let the audience have fun with it. Yeah.
Incredible. Well, Ray, what's next for you in this new EP? It's called I Wake and Remember.
I'm just excited to have it on the platforms. And then I'm just happy to finally share this with my friends and then everyone who I've worked with and to have them see what it's like for a film composer to become like an artist themselves.
Well, congratulations again. That's Ray Ho, who's an international singer-songwriter and composer. His new EP, I Wake and Remember, releases here in the U.S. tomorrow. Thank you for joining me, Ray.
Thank you so much.
Let's go out on one more from your new EP. What can you tell us about A Long Distance Song?
Oh, that is a very relatable question for a lot of people out there because long-distance relationships is a very, very common thing to do.
Yes.
In this century. And it's based on my own experience. I live in Taipei and Chicago, so obviously I travel a lot. So I do have a girlfriend in Chicago and we have to do long distance all the time. Aww. And it's grueling. So this is kind of a song for her. And it kind of has the same kind of thematic distance memory kind of theme to it, but in a light way. Yeah.
How sweet. Take care, Ray.
Thank you.
And I don't think that I could go another day without holding your hand. 'Cause every night at a certain time I lose my mind.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Ethan Schwab. It was edited by Meha Ahmed. If you enjoyed this conversation, subscribe to the pod so that you never miss another. You can also check out our full archive of conversations at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll meet again on Monday.
When I can open my eyes to you in the morning. Pretending we're dancing. Just hold your hand when I feel like I'm drowning.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.